If you're just joining us, this is Brian Curtis hosting the KHSU magazine. And I'm joined in the studio now by Aaron Johnston, Kate Toby, and Drew Panabecker of the play Jane Doe in Wonderland. Welcome, y'all.
Thank you.
Hi, thanks.
Oh, thank you. Gang's all here. I guess we should start off with sort of an overview. Would one of you care to give us a little rap about what the play is about?
Sure, I'll jump on that one. So the play was written by myself, Aaron, and another woman, Grace Booth, about a year and a half ago in collaboration with a local nonprofit, Game Over, which is a survivor-led nonprofit that talks about sex trafficking happening in Humboldt County. So the play uses the metaphor of Alice in Wonderland to follow Alice as she's kind of lured into Wonderland, into the world of sex trafficking, and kind of details how a victim gets lured in. So the tactics that traffickers use, and the kind of using the metaphor of Wonderland with these characters being various people that exist in the world. Yeah,
when Elle came to us with the idea of the show, she really identified with Alice and the experience that Alice experiences through the journey down Wonderland. So the characters just really parallel those in the trafficking world. For example, we have Tweedledee and Tweedledum in the show, and they are Johns, or purchasers. And if you read the book, the way that they treat Alice is very entitled, and they seem to think that they can just play games and do whatever they want, and they're not very nice to her. And so that sort of boyishness, entitlement, really plays over into this idea that Johns aren't really aware that, you know, this is another human being that is in a victim circumstance.
And we also have the role of the White Rabbit, which, Drew, you play.
That's true.
That is true. At least, well, you're confirming it, so it must be true. What's it like to kind of be sort of a villain role in a sense where you are coming to this play as someone who believes in its message, mm-hmm. and then becoming the antithesis of that message? Just like, okay, here's everything I stand for, and now I'm the guy who has to like act out the complete opposite of it.
Yeah, it's been a really interesting like acting proposal, I guess, from everyone. Because you're right. I really am behind the project, and I really like the project. But everything that I've been doing to prepare has all been coming from the perpetrator's point of view. So I've been reading books like. There's a book called Pimpology, the 48 Laws of the Game, written by a man named Pimpin' Kin. And you can just buy it like in bookstores. And it's all about the pimp mentality, how to take advantage of people. His whole philosophy boils down to you're either a pimp or a hoe in every aspect of your life. So how can you be more like a pimp?
It was sort of skeevy to read on Game Over's website that there's actually like social networking pages and like Facebook pages for pimps to sort of share techniques and things like that.
Yeah. I think that was one of the most fascinating aspects when I got pulled on, because I didn't know anything about sex trafficking before the ladies asked me to join them. And so to find that it was like this whole codified system, there's a whole culture that surrounds it. They have lingo and they have ways and methods and means to bend people to their will is really it was kind of shocking.
I'm going to throw it back to Kate and Aaron here. What have you learned from this process over the last year and a half about the subject matter that you're tackling, and what drew you to it in the first place?
Well, pretty much we've had an entire shift of perspective. It's been one of those processes where we just jumped in because we wanted to partner with a community member, and Elle was very open to working with us because she had artistic ideas and wanted to tell this story through art. But we really didn't have any idea what we were about to encounter. And through Elle's training, which she offers about monthly throughout the county, and she trains law enforcement and foster care families and such. But through her training, we were suddenly confronted with a lot of our own assumptions that we make about what is actually going on in the world when it comes to trafficking and what prostitution is. And you just sort of have to take a look at yourself and a look at your life and say, wow, I've I really have had no idea what is going on and what happens to these women and these victims.
And on top of that, I mean, yes, not knowing what actually happens, but coming to this kind of difficult realization of, I've been a part of the culture. My ignorance has led me to use pimp as something that's glorified. I've been a part of glorifying these people and have, you know, at times victim blamed, and at times, you know, just unconsciously things that you don't really even realize you're doing. All of a sudden, the way that you speak or the way that you look at something has my entire perspective has really shifted. And it was definitely a long process of like forgiving yourself and realizing, okay, this was born not out of malicious intent, but out of ignorance. And now that I am educated and aware, how do I therefore begin to have those difficult conversations with people that I meet all the time, every day, that the more we talk about this, the more educated everyone becomes, and slowly the culture begins to shift, and it does begin with myself, and, you know, with this show, of course. Mm-hmm. But the show is really about sparking conversations, and especially reaching youth, reaching high schoolers, where, you know, there's a ton of slut shaming and victim blaming that just happens because you're not aware. There's ignorance that surrounds. I mean, everyone, but I think if we get people young enough to begin to shift perspective, that's when, like, things really begin to change as future generations taking a stand.
Yeah, we have one scene in the play that Alice and Jane Doe, Alice becomes Jane Doe, but they run into the Garden of Live Flowers, and that sort of represents the female voices in society. And this section of the play really looks at why don't victims run? Well, when they do run, what are they coming to in society? What are the perceptions and the language and these assumptions that we all have that when they run to, it's no one understands what they've been going through and no one really sees it. So that's kind of another way that Elle was like, this analogy really works and speaks for her in a way. One thing that the goal of the play is to really provide a platform for survivors to speak. And so every time the play's done, the goal is to have the play, but it's always followed by a survivor talk back. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mixing a little fact with the fiction. Yeah, I was curious about the approach and the decision to incorporate the play at all over, you know, a more just sort of like lecture survivor talk, like just having that isolated. What does having the creative aspect bring to it that makes the message more understandable?
I think the play is very digestible, and the way that it's been written, using the metaphors, makes it very accessible. Whereas sometimes it can be, Elle talks about how she feels like she, when she gets up and does a training, she has to justify herself or explain herself. And she's really beginning from zero because people have no idea about this topic.
With the characters of Wonderland and knowing them already, everybody knows the "Who are you?" text, and they know who the White Rabbit is kind of in their minds. So if they're able to see these characters, but with a slight twist, suddenly they're able to enter into this world in a way that we don't have. There's a lot of things that don't have to be explained. Instead, they get to follow the characters and empathize with them through this journey.
Yeah, the metaphor itself is so strong that we don't have to explain or talk about it all that much. Everything just kind of lives on its own.
Yeah, and also it deals with subjects that, you know, are pretty heavy, and to hear Elle talk about it and to read some of the transcripts of her interviews, you know, there's certainly the path that could be taken of just getting down to the nitty-gritty detail, which for some would be really intense to hear and triggering. So perhaps taking the artistic approach helps strike a balance between like the gravity of the situation, but also making it accessible and something that people want to see. Like if you're just saying like, come listen to victims describe their trauma for an hour, a lot of people would just be like, well, I'm not
It's hard to hear.
And the big takeaway from the show is talking about the psychological manipulation, the brainwashing that victims undergo to answer the question of why don't they run. So to talk about it in a broader sense, instead of, like you say, survivors getting up and saying very specific details, it's really getting people to understand that it's not necessarily physical abuse why victims stay. It's using the same tactics that cult leaders use and prisoner of wars have undergone.
And to that end, we've specifically written the play not to be violent or explicit. In fact, there's moments that are entertaining and funny, and the audience can feel to laugh, mm-hmm. that it is not something that they have to, like, okay, I'm going to strap myself down and prepare for this. No, it's a theatrical experience.
Let's talk a little bit more about how the play came together, because about a year or so ago, you did a series of sort of read-throughs where you were just basically reading through the script before a live audience, but now it's a full-blown production. What's the process been like in taking it from point A to point B?
Lots of learning.
The script was originally written as myself, Aaron, and Grace all graduated from Del Arte's master's program, and that came out of a 5-week project that was an engagement with a community member in order to have some sort of theatrical event surrounding it. So we locked ourselves in a library and spent three weeks writing
and researching.
So really the script came out of 3 weeks of writing, and then took the 2 weeks to put on the stage reading. And this last year and a half has really been a call from the community to say, this can't end here. We need to have every high schooler needs to see this. That it needs to get out there. And so it's been a lot of us using our, I was just talking about this too, like how we utilize each other's strengths with the trio of us of, mm-hmm. you know, Grace is an incredible writer. So she's been grant master and has just been, working those grants and finding money and getting support from community. Aaron's directing and tour managing and kind of like organizer extraordinaire.
And Kate like has just an incredible eye for design. So it kind of was no question that it was like, oh, Kate's going to take on stage production and design the set and the costumes and the props and kind of take our vision that together as creators we have and gets to kind of have that creative design aspect, which you had never really actually done before.
No, not at all.
A lot of us we had never done before.
Yeah, it's all been a great process of learning of like, how do you write a grant? And, oh, I don't actually know how to use a saw. Let's learn how to do that.
So it sounds like you've got a great team, and what has been described so far by the audience feedback that I've seen is a great play. So assuming this 3 weeks go well, do you have plans to expand beyond the county, take it to the state, to the United States? What's next?
It's sort of in development. Really, we're in response to the community, and we've already had calls from Del Norte County and down to even like southern Humboldt County, kind of we're not really getting past Ferndale to say like, hey, are you bringing the show down here? And the nice thing about the play is that it's partnered with a survivor talkback. So ideally, one option is to say, hey, if you want to do this in your community, because Drew, you're from St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned that there might even be.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's totally pertinent to St. Louis. But I think it's also pertinent to just about every place in America. So
having a statewide tour or a national tour is definitely something we're kind of looking forward to as a possibility.
Awesome. Well, I wish you all the best.
Thanks.
Why don't you tell the good listeners when and where they can come see Jane Doe in Wonderland.
Well, we have many public performances and also school shows that we are going to be running, which aren't going to be open to the public, but I'll mention them anyways.
We've got student listeners.
Awesome.
Spending their lunch breaks with the magazine. What's up, everybody?
Well, we appreciate it.
What's up, students?
So here are our tour dates. On March 28th at 12:30 p.m., we're going to be at College of the Redwoods. That's a school show. March 29th at 6:30 p.m., we'll be at Ferndale Repertory Theater, open to the public. March 31st 21st at 6:30 will be at Del Arte International. From April 3rd through 5th at 6:30 p.m. will be at North Coast Repertory Theater. That's also public shows. And then April 8th, we're doing a smaller show at 7 p.m. for HSU students, open to the public, but seating is limited, so get your tickets. April 11th at 4 p.m., we're doing an awesome show for the Boys and Girls Club of the Redwoods. April 12th at 6:30, we are going to be at Eureka High School, and that is a public show. April 13th at 1:30, we're going to be showing this to the freshmen of Arcata High, Six Rivers High, and the AAI students there. And we're ending off our tour on April 14th for a morning show for the Corton Community School.
Full bill. If you missed that or you want to just refresh your sweet, sweet memory, you can check out JaneDoeInWonderland.com or look for them on Facebook. Kate, Aaron, and Drew, thank you so much for taking the time to come in and talk with me
today.
Thanks
so much for having us.
Yeah, you're very welcome.